Well, welcome to the April 7th, 2021 morning session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I'm Rico Bishop of Lincoln. I'm pleased to be joined by Judge Frankie Moore from North Platte and Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna. I want to remind you that these oral arguments are being live streamed by NETV, and they're being recorded and will be posted on the Nebraska Supreme Court's website. So if you intend to share any confidential or sensitive information, please be mindful of that. You should also be able to see the time clock on your screen. If you cannot, let us know. And just based on the experience of this morning, I would remind you that when the light goes red and you see the number, you start to see the time increase, and you might mistakenly think you still have that much time, but it's actually showing you how much time you've gone over. So be mindful of the difference between the green and the red light. All right. With that, we will proceed with the third and final case of our session this morning, and that is Amston versus Amston. Ms. Kotick, I believe you're counsel for appellant, and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, good morning. My name is Stephanie Kotick, and I represent Tracy Amston on this appeal of the district court order changing custody of her children. In the decree of dissolution of March 12th of 2018, the court entered an order that the parties were to share the joint legal custody of their two minor sons, with Ms. Amston having the sole physical being awarded the sole physical custody. On April 28th of 2020, the trial court entered a journal entry and a court-ordered parenting plan sustaining Mr. Amston's motion to enforce agreement. Such court-ordered parenting plan purported to modify the custody of the children such that the physical custody would be changed to Mr. Amston, with the parties continuing to have joint legal custody. The issues before the court today really boil down to three issues: whether there was sufficient evidence for the court to find that the parties had entered into a stipulation as to all matters before the trial court, such that the trial court could enforce the agreement; two, if the evidence before the court showed that there was a material change in circumstances, and therefore it was in the best interest of the children to modify the parenting plan and change the custody of the children; and three, if the journal entry and court-ordered parenting plan was actually a sufficient order to be a modification order. Counsel for the appellee argued that Ms. Amston did not raise these issues at the trial court level to preserve them on appeal, and we believe that the only thing on the record that is clear is that Ms. Amston objected to this change of custody. In the record for the trial court, the closest that Ms. Amston came to agreeing that a modification should be entered was to say that she supposed that she agreed with the oral recitation of what the agreement was. She stated in the hearing on February 12, 2020, that she did not believe that a change in custody was in the best interest of the children.
And did she actually say that?
The record that I saw at on page six, sorry, let me look at my citation very quickly. Page six.
Didn't the court ask her, do you understand or do you believe this to be in the best interest of your children? And she said no, but yeah. And then the court said, okay, sometimes it's difficult, and I realized that. And she said, it's hard, really hard. And the court acknowledged and said it appreciated that. But ultimately, she did agree to the stipulation. I mean, wouldn't that have been the time to say, no, stop everything, I'm not on board? But she didn't do that.
I do concede that is actually what she said. You're right. She said no, but yes. At that point, I think that it was made clear to the court that there was going to be a stipulation that was signed by the parties, that was entered by to be entered by the court, and that stipulation was never signed by anyone to show what the actual agreement was.
But the court, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. But Ms. Kotick, you are not alleging that. It was uncertain what was stipulated to orally in court, are you?
I do believe that it was uncertain as to what was stipulated in the court. They, the, um, the recitation to the court was that essentially that the parenting plan would be flip-flopped. There was then the court, they also said that, and if the record does say essentially that's what was said, the record also reflects that the parties both acknowledged that even though they were there for trial that day, that they did not have the sufficient information to be able to do child support calculations, and that they would be presented at a later time with the stipulation signed by the parties. And there was never any evidence as to what the child support should have actually been.
The child support is a separate issue here. I'll agree with you on that. But with regard to the change in physical custody and parenting time, what was unclear about that as it was recited in court?
What the parenting time would actually be. I believe that in the hearing on in the April 2020 hearing, that Ms. Anston stated that she wasn't sure what the parenting plan that was being presented to the court actually said, that she stated that she was not sure what the agreement was. And the bottom line is that the allegations before the court, the complaint to modify stated that the reason that there was a material change in circumstances was because the parties had, because Ms. Anston had moved. And so that it made it difficult for the parenting time to be exercised by Mr. Anston, but yet the parenting time essentially in the court ordered parenting plan stayed the same just for Ms. Anston to have to exercise that parenting time. But essentially the parenting time in that new order, in that court ordered parenting plan was the exact same, which leads to say that was there really a material change in circumstances if that was not in the best interest of the children? How could it just be flip-flopped at that point to be the same time if that was one of the reasons that there was a material change in circumstances?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand her testimony at the hearing on the motion to enforce wasn't that I didn't understand what the stipulation was. It was I was essentially forced into it by my previous lawyer, and I didn't agree with it.
She did say that. She did it absolutely say she was forced into it and she didn't agree to it. But then at one point she did state in the record, I am not sure what that agreement is that is being presented to the court. I'm not sure what parenting plan they're asking for. Both of those were stated in the record. Counsel for the appellee seems to argue that Ms. Anston simply had a change of heart after entering the agreement. And we would argue that it is clear from the record there was never an agreement. I think it's clear that there was not an agreement with any of the items of the for the financial purposes for child support, which was essential and in modifying that decree. And there was not really an agreement as to how the parenting time was actually going to be. There was never any evidence of the court swearing the parties in to ask them if they had an agreement or had an understanding of what the agreement was, that there was nothing signed by Ms. Anston. And I don't
think Ms. Koenig, I realize you weren't trial counsel, but your client's counsel at the time is the one who actually gave the initial recitation of what the agreement was and said quite specifically that they were just flip-flopping the schedule that had been in place. And when the court asked your client about that, she heard the agreement and she said she agreed with it. So don't you think it's problematic to have people agree on the record before the court to terms that the parties have reached and agreed upon to subsequently say, I changed my mind? I mean, we could never have finality in those instances. So I'm interested in knowing whether there was anything from your perspective that occurred after that agreement that would warrant reconsideration of that agreement.
I believe that the fact that Ms. Anston has stated that she, was not in agreement and was essentially forced by her attorney, and then later her attorney was allowed to withdraw before the motion for enforcement, and that the fact that she had asked the court for some time to have an attorney represent her in that matter after her attorney had been allowed to withdraw shows that there was a real question as to what her understanding of what the agreement was and whether or not that agreement as it was written should have been enforced as it was. I don't believe that, I understand what you're saying about the parties making a stipulation on the record and then having a change of heart. And I do think that this case is different in that I don't believe that there was any actual acknowledgement from the parties that there was an understanding of what the stipulation was, besides the fact that they were essentially flip-flopping the parenting plan from before, and that there would be something written and signed by the parties at a later time as to what the agreement actually was. I believe that best practices would be that that maybe it would have been something more specific, hammered out, read on the record, swearing in the parties and asking if this is the agreement that was reached, so that it is clear from the record that the parties understand what that agreement is and what was agreed upon.
Counsel, I want to redirect you real quick on the continuance and the request for the continuance. Is it problematic that that was not a basis for the motion for a new trial?
I don't know. I don't believe so, because I believe that that was something that she had objected to going forward at that point. And the appeal is not specifically on the basis for the new trial. It's on the entire record as to whether or not that order should have been entered. And so I don't believe. I think she said she didn't want to go forward and she wanted an attorney.
Thank you.
And it looks as though my time is up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Newhouse.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Joseph Newhouse. May it please the court. This is quite simply a case in which there's no evidence to substantiate the appellant's claim. Ms. Kotick mentioned that there was an objection, and that was the only evidence on the record. In fact, there was no evidence of such objection. It's clear from the record that she stated when asked if this was in the best interest of the child, of the children, she said no, but yeah. And then the judge addressed that, and there was no objection at the time. There's no objection in the evidence. Furthermore, there's no evidence presented by counsel for appellant in this entire proceeding. There's no evidence presented regarding any insufficiency of the modification. There's no evidence disputing that there wasn't a material change in circumstances. In fact, she stated that Ms. Amson had moved, but she left out in the oral argument that there was police activity in her home. That was an allegation. There was no evidence to claim that there wasn't a material change. And furthermore, the parties agreed on the record that this was in the best interest of the children. That's the standard. And only if there's evidence to suggest otherwise, may this court disturb the trial court's findings. There is no such evidence. For example, Ms. Kotick discusses that there was no swearing in. Well, as this court properly recognized, the counsel did that. Prior counsel for appellant had done that at the time. There was no evidence of such force of this prior counsel that she had been coerced into this agreement. Furthermore, on the withdrawal of the counsel, after he withdrew, new counsel for the appellant had an opportunity to present evidence. There was no such evidence. The only thing there was were a couple handwritten notes. That wasn't evidence. Those are unsubstantiated claims that something had occurred, but no evidence.
Mr. Newhouse, those exhibits 1 and 2 were received by the court, weren't they?
Yes, they were, Your Honor. I would say that they certainly weren't sworn if there was no affidavit. There was no testimony on those to substantiate that those were valid documents, that was valid evidence. They weren't authenticated. There was no opportunity to cross-examine any of that information. So these were simply just claims that were unsubstantiated, Your Honor.
I was just going to say, but once they're offered and received into evidence and none of those objections are made, that they're hearsay or irrelevant, do we consider that? I mean, she purports them to be her statements, and once they're received by the court, don't we accept them as such?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, but there was an objection to hearsay on the record, I believe.
And overruled?
I can't recall whether it was overruled. I think it was that was admitted despite the standard objections of hearsay. Nevertheless, there's no evidence, and then there, based on the pleadings that are in the underlying trial court, there's no evidence presented that there actually was a coercion. The other thing is, as I stated previously, there was an opportunity to present such evidence. So therefore I would say that we have to go based on the trial court's findings, and those were clearly in favor that both parties agreed that this was in the best interest of the children, on the record. Aside from the no evidence, there were no actual pleadings sufficient to substantiate the claims that are made in appellant's brief or in the oral argument today. The simple fact is that the underlying record clearly shows that the court was advised in the premises that both parties agreed to this stipulation at the time. And essentially the evidence suggests that, well, she had a change of heart later. Aside from that, I would rest on my brief, and I would be happy to answer any questions that the court may have.
Would you agree that there had been no stipulation regarding incomes for purposes of calculating child support then, and therefore that was not part of the agreement on February 12th?
I would agree. I think it was necessary that they obtained certain information for that child support calculation, Your Honor.
And Ms. Amston did not sign off on the final proposed rendition of what was supposed to be the agreement, right? So she did not agree to any of the terms that were set forth in the agreement submitted to the court.
I would agree that she agreed to the terms that were in the final document, although she did not sign that document. She agreed when the court had inquired whether she thought it was the best interest of the children to do that flip-flopping.
Counsel, can you address the court's refusal to what I will refer to as grant her a continuance? I know she didn't file a motion, but she did specifically ask that she would like more time so she could find an attorney before this matter went much further, I think is what she indicated. What's the basis for denying that motion or that request?
Your Honor, I don't know what, I don't believe the court gave a reason specific in the record. So I think we would have to guess as to what that is. And according to the well-founded and long-standing jurisprudence, an appellate court, unless there's a clear abuse of discretion, must defer to the judgment of the trial court. If I had to assume, it would be, I would assume that there was a good reason for it, but I don't know what that is.
I mean, when I look at the case law on whether there has been an abuse of discretion in denying a motion to continue, it's looking at factors like, have there been prior requests by that party? Is it made for dilatory purposes? What's the importance of the issues that are to be addressed? And none of those seem to weigh in favor of denying a continuance at this point.
Your Honor, I would say that there was, we have to go based on the record. So I think we have to speculate as to what that reason was. I think that's, you raise a good point. I don't know what the reason was. I know that continuances are denied. And I would assume that it's because Ms. Amston agreed on the record that this was in the best interests of the children. And then there was a change at some point after that. She made that statement to the court. This was something that was indicated by her prior counsel that they were going to make that stipulation. And then there was a change. So I don't think the continuance is based on any sort of dilatory or abuse of discretion. I would assume that the judge had a good reason for that. And I would think that, as I pointed out, it's this change came after that clear recitation on the record that she agreed that it was in the best interest of the children.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else, Mr. Newhouse?
Nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I believe Ms. Kotick was out of time.
I was, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much. The matter is submitted and you are excused and may sign off.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.